Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take challenging problems in working life and business and find out exactly what is going on and see if there's anything we can do to make it that little bit better. And today, and I don't want to sound dramatic, we are going to be helping with the thing that people fear the most. So if we look at like the top 10 list of fears, we've got things like dating on there, wedding speeches, participating in group discussions, speeches, work presentations, all the kind of stuff you'd expect to see it. But right at the very top, in regards to what people are most afraid of, are job interviews. And with the job market as it is, job interviews are becoming more and more a source of, one, concern, two, pressure, and three, just in general, I'm seeing a lot of content around people panicking and freaking out. And so what I thought today, as ever in my mission to provide a public service loosely of some sort, is today I thought we would look at essentially the top five most common concerns when it comes to interviews, the things people are most worried about, whether it's things like salary discussions, whether it's things like imposter syndrome, whatever it might be. I'm going to go through the top five and basically give you my advice on how to handle it if you fear it. And even if you're not interviewing, by the way, this stuff is worth listening to because I think it covers a lot of working place stuff as well. And I'm going to pull the curtain back a little bit in regards to how big businesses think and how people might be thinking from a management perspective when approaching a role like this. So the first thing I'm going to be talking about is imposter syndrome. And we all know what I'm talking about here. It's that sort of classic feeling of incompetence, or it's like laughable that you even got an interview and like, I don't know what you're thinking, applying for the job, like there's no way you'll get it. And even if you did get it, there's no way you'll be able to do it. And you don't know what you were thinking about applying in the first place. And oh my God, what am I going to do? They're going to think I'm an idiot, etc., etc. And this absolutely applies to women more than men. Like women, for whatever reason, do seem to be much more sort of low key when it comes to kind of underestimating their abilities. And I think what I would say about it is this, right? It is not on you to judge whether you can do the job or not. That is on the company's job. So there's absolutely no harm in going for it because A, the worst they can do is say no, and B, you never quite know how much you know. I think people, this is one of the biggest things I kind of try and teach someone is when you've been working for a few years, right? Or even if you've not really worked before, whatever it might be, you're always surprised by how much you know. It's only when talking to someone who knows absolutely nothing that you really start to realize that actually, no, I do know a little bit about this topic. And that's a really important attitude to think about. So when it comes to imposter syndrome, just go for it. It is not your job. It is not on you to apologize if you think you're wasting people's time or whatever it might be. That is on the company to deal with. So you might as well apply for it. Do you see what I mean? And the reason why this is so important, right, is the amount of cretins who get a job who fundamentally shouldn't have got the job, but just simply because they had the gumption to delude themselves and think they could do it, they actually then go ahead and get the job. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And I'm not being harsh here. Like, it's really important to recognize that because 64% of employees surveyed felt they were unqualified for positions, and 59% believe that there'll be more qualified candidates applying, so why bother? Like, think about those numbers. You're not an isolated case. In fact, it sounds more unusual if you think you're someone who can absolutely just wander in and absolutely nail it. And we actually had a joke growing up in my family. Like, basically, my sister was one of those people who thought she'd fail every single exam and managed to absolutely ace every single thing she moved in. And my brother would wander in, think he'd absolutely nailed it, and then we'd all be sort of hiding when his exam results finally came out. Like, there is a difference between, sorry Dom if you're listening into this, but it is surprising how many people wildly underestimate how good they are at the job. And like, my favorite imposter syndrome moment of all time, and it's probably everyone's favorite moment of all time, is that famous interview at the BBC where this poor guy shows up basically for a job interview and they accidentally put him in on the main sort of news and asking questions about the music industry. And I'm just going to cut to the clip where he starts talking and responding to her questions, because honestly, he does absolutely amazingly well.
The editor of the technology website News Wireless. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Were you surprised by this verdict today?
I'm very surprised to see this verdict to come on me, because I was not expecting that. When I came, they told me something else, and I'm coming. You got an interview there, so it's
a big surprise. He does so well. Honestly, it's one of those heartwarming, wonderful clips of all time. Like, his just face. Sorry, if you're listening to this on podcast, you can't see it, but please do search for it just to see the look on his face when he kind of realizes live on air that this isn't a job interview and is actually the BBC News. And it's just, and look, and what's amazing, right, is he ran with it. He pivoted. He kind of ended up with a situation where he kind of could give an answer. And I think that's kind of my point, right? That was classic imposter. If someone had asked him at the start of the day, there's no way he said, yeah, I'm ready to go on air and talk about the music industry in a news clip, right? But he did it, and I think this is what I mean, right? It's always just worth going for it. No one ever regrets trying in the end, but it's very hard to kind of bring yourself to try. So when you are confronted with imposter syndrome, just remember two things. One, you never quite know what you know, so it's worth going for it anyway. And two, it's not your bloody job to work out if you can do it or not. That's the company's. And so it's absolutely on them to do it, at which point it's a guilt-free application. Go for it. Just apply, see what happens. You never quite know. I really do mean that. And also, I think what's bear in mind, right, is the impact it can have psychologically on the job, because if you go in with that attitude, and look, by the way, right, I'm saying attitude, and I know it's not as easy as sort of clicking a button, but I'm hoping it will sort of at least start a conversation in your head that maybe this is something you can confront and something you shouldn't listen to, at least try not to listen to as much as you can, much as you do. And the other bit that really bugs me about imposter syndrome, and again, like, by the way, I really do understand why this affects people, but like, I see people overanalyze their ability so much, to the extent where they say, oh, am I at a senior level or am I just kind of like a good medium level? Like, do you see what I mean? Like, I see people do that so much and like give themselves such a hard time. Say, oh, I can't apply for a senior position. I've only done mid-level for 3 years. You know, dude, there's so many like examples where I would just say, like, just go for it. Because one, like I already covered, it's absolutely on the company to weed that out anyway. But two, the lack of effort that some companies on the flip side put into job descriptions compared to how much stress people put on whether they should apply or not is absolutely ridiculous. And like, this job spec in particular just highlights so many issues for me straight away. And it goes like this: hi, with an exclamation mark. No idea why. We are looking for an amazing adult with a great personality and common sense. Must have experience being friendly, outgoing, organized, clean, and be drama free. So straight away, this sounds like a Mean Girls birthday party invitation, but we'll press on. Able to keep up in a fast pace and to keep busy during downtime. It's like, well, hang on. There's no point creating work for the sake of it. Can you handle constructive criticism? Guarantee it won't be. Flexibility is a must. Why do I have a feeling that when they say flexibility, they don't mean hybrid work from home situations? I feel like flexibility more like you must stay late and I need you in at 7 a.m. in the morning. Must be willing to actually work. Pay is very good, but you have to work for it, as opposed to that free money that we're all well accustomed to getting. Plus bonus gift cards when earned. Nice and specific. Thanks a latte. Is that a spelling error? Are they trying to be funny? You will be reported to the department. It's got a PS. You will be reported to the Department of Unemployment if you do not show up to your interview with us. Wow. That is quite a job. And you go, look, you've got some people like overanalyzing whether they could do their job, the job or not. And then you have people basically writing a complete shit show of a job description. So you just go, just apply. Like, come on, these are the people you're competing with, right? The people writing those job descriptions shouldn't have jobs. So at the very least, you should it's worth you having a little bit of an apply for it. So I really do mean that. But this is a very real problem, and this comment summarizes it nicely. I know this is completely ridiculous, but I can't shake the imposter syndrome. For example, when I'm preparing for the interview and looking back over the job description, I start questioning how well I actually know the roles and skills they're asking for, even though I currently do them to some extent at my current job. And I think this is where I'm going to let you in on the big secret when it comes to imposter syndrome. It's actually a really good sign if you don't think you can do the whole job. And the reason I say that is nothing leads to boredom or dissatisfaction in a job more than feeling like it's easy, you can do everything without even thinking, and your mind doesn't get out of second gear at all. Like, that's a really bad sign for someone, because that's where disengagement happens. That's where people start to really struggle with motivation, and that's often when they start to drag other people down with it as well. And so when it comes to, look, you obviously want to be able to do some of it, right? But when it comes to job descriptions, never be afraid of looking at 20% of a job description saying, oh, I don't think I can do that. Relish that. That's a great opportunity. If you can do 80% confidently and you think, oh, actually that extra 20%, I don't know, but I would love to have a go at it. That's a really, really good sign. One of the best things you can have to motivate you and be productive on a job is to not know something, because that's a challenge. That's new. That's exciting. And so that's what I mean when it comes to imposter syndrome. It can be a really healthy sign to look at a job description and say, I'm pretty sure I could do most of this, but I'm not too sure about that bit, but it sounds quite interesting and I'd love to have a go. Like, that is one of the best mindsets you can have. So never let imposter syndrome like cloud that, okay? Because I think when I'm interviewing people, that is one of the most things I'm looking at. I never want someone who can tick every single box off. I want someone who can tick most of them off, who are then keen to learn the others, because that's how I'll know they'll be engaged and interested and challenged. And I do think that's a really important piece of advice when it comes to management, leadership, and other things like that. Which brings us on to interview challenge number two: how to address career gaps. Now, this is a really popular one. This is something that gets a lot of press, it gets a lot of clips on social. There's a lot of comments all over the place, and this one summarizes it nicely. I have two short gaps of 2 months and 1 month over a 12-year-long career, but this occasionally gets referenced and highlighted by recruiters and hiring managers like it's a major red flag. And so firstly, let's be very clear. Any company or hiring manager that treats career gaps as a red flag, I think is a red flag in itself, and it's probably a company you don't want to be working with long term, right? However, I do understand that's an association sometimes. We're in quite a tough market. Sometimes you do just want to kind of get the interview and get as much success, or at least give the option of joining if you so choose. And so my advice when it comes to career gaps is, one, do not be ashamed of it, okay? There are so many very good reasons why, and it could be anything from personal stuff, dealing with family. It could be something quite exciting like going traveling. It could be anything that you like. It could be something you want to just stick for pride. And it can just be simply, look, I worked really hard. I put a great shift in. I was a bit tired, a bit burnt out. I wanted to be fresh for my next company, so I took a few months off. Okay, there is absolutely nothing wrong. The worst thing you can do in an interview, though, when it comes to this in an application sense, is act bashful or act ashamed or joke about it. Absolutely not. When it comes to career gaps, steer into it. Emphasize why it was a good decision for you and why you need to do it. Obviously, if it's family and personal stuff, you absolutely do not need to give the details whatsoever. You can simply say that and said, you know, family duty is obviously really important to me, etc. I had to do something, you know, etc. If it was traveling, you can very much clearly say, look, I worked really hard. I'm a really hard worker. I put in everything. And so when I left my last job, I thought, right, I want to come back to my new employer. I want to be unbelievably refreshed. I always had an urge to travel. I always wanted to travel to this one country. I thought, what the hell, let's do it. And now I'm back and now I'm really refreshed. Do you see what I mean? That you put a positive spin on why it is. Do not hide it. Do not be ashamed of it. Put it on your CV. Don't do that thing where people go, you've not worked 6 months, but you try and hide it in between like job role. Like, just own it. Put it on the CV. Own it. Explain why. And I promise you, most good companies do not give a flying hoot about that. However, and if there are someone who really kicks up a fuss about it, my honest advice is you kind of want to dip them anyway and not a company you want to work for. But like, the worst thing you can do, and I think where you might start to turn good companies off, is if you act really embarrassed, act a little bit ashamed, act like it is like you just dossing off. No, it's not. It's not. Like, no, it's not. You're allowed to have a career break. It's such a ridiculous thing. So many people work so much harder because they've had a few months. Do you see what I mean? Like, it's such an obvious point. And often what happens, do you know what happens, by the way, when people go traveling? Because they, well, first, when they go, I never want to go back. Within a couple, you know, most people at some point go, do you know what? I really fancy starting to work again. Like, I feel relaxed. I feel refreshed. I actually want to get back to it. I want to get back to my career. What an amazing hire. Say that in the interview. Say, I've had the most incredible 6 months off. And actually, I really sort of sorted myself out. And I came back and look at what I did in my next job once I was refreshed. Like, there's so many good ways to answer that question. But the worst thing you can do is be embarrassed about it. Okay. And because one, there's bloody well nothing to be embarrassed about. And two, there's so many positives that come off the back of it. Like, literally put it this way, right? Who would you rather hire? Someone who's 6 months getting their head straight, feeling refreshed, sort of topping up all their social batteries, or someone who's had a brutal 12 months slaving away, desperately trying to clear out the next project? Like, who do you want working for you? Like, do you see what I mean? Like, there's so many obvious positives about it. So absolutely never be embarrassed and make sure you steer into the skid on that one. So tip number three is going to be around salary negotiation. Now look, salary negotiation is a massive topic and we'll probably do its own episode on that at some point. But for now, I'm going to be talking about the idea of salary negotiation in a job interview. And you all know what I'm talking about. It's that part of the interview where, you know, perhaps you've answered a few questions, you're feeling quite smooth, you're into your rhythm, you feel quite confident, you feel like things are going well, you're kind of a little bit chuffed with yourself. And then they ask the question, and what are your salary expectations? And your whole body and your mind at the same time simultaneously shut down. It is one of the most awkward questions. Everyone finds it incredibly awkward. There are very few questions that people would rather hear. And I really want to emphasize this. Companies are fully aware that employees are less comfortable talking about money than they are. And that absolutely gives them an upper hand when it comes to this situation. And this next clip, by the way, summarizes so many of the problems so very much.
How much would be your expected salary?
How much is the position offering? If I may ask.
It depends on the position actually, since we're in the start, depending on your experience, the job role, and the client itself, okay?
Oh, it's so awkward. It's so awkward to watch. It really is. And, like, she's done nothing wrong. Like, she doesn't know. She's not experienced. So it's absolutely not her fault. So anything I'm about to say is absolutely not a dig at her. Please, please, please hear me when I say that. But the mistake she makes, right, is not giving a number. When it comes to any sort of negotiation, the first number is really important because you then set the boundary in regards to what you're going to be negotiating around. My honest advice is to take the number that you want from the job, add 10% to it, and then say that number, and then pause. Pause, pause, pause. Do not say the next word. Once you have said your salary expectations, you shut up. It will feel like the longest pause in the world. You will feel almost an overwhelming sense of having to jump in to fill the empty void that is now this conversation with additional words, trying to justify it. But do not do that. Let them talk next. Because you have given a number. You've been very clear. It is not an awkward conversation because you have to address this at some point, and this is just part of how interviews go, but it's so important that you don't then fill that void in once you start talking. Simply say then take the number you want, add 10%, and then say it. Wait for them to play the next move. What's going to happen, by the way, if they're happy to pay you that, they will say something like, you know, we would love to sort of pay you that, however our budget only goes to but just below, and they will knock you down a little bit, right? That's what the 10% kicker is for. That's why you add it on. Companies will always just try and come in a little bit less. Fine, that's how it works, right? The thing that people get always really worried about, right, is pricing themselves out of it. But if you're saying the salary that you want, that shouldn't matter. Because if they really like you, I really do mean this, by the way, if they really like you, they will tell you what their maximum amount is, and then you have a decision to make. If they say, oh, you're just outside the budget and don't give you the amount, they probably weren't going to pick you at all. So you might as well say the number that you want. What you don't want to do, and this is so important, is get yourself underpaid because you lost the confidence to give the amount that you wanted. So it's so key that you say the number with confidence. Don't sort of justify it. Don't try spinning it. They do ask you to justify it. That's absolutely fine. You can give specific reasons, referring to the market, referring to your previous paycheck, perhaps referring to your skills, referring to the sort of salary range they have in there, whatever it might be. There are lots of things you can say to that, but that comes later and only if they ask for it, okay? Otherwise, just say it, because don't forget, all the conversation you've had so far is about the salary. You just hadn't spoken about money yet, because that's what a job interview is. So it's so important that you say that, and then you shut up. You do not say another word, and you let them do it. And the reason why you want to say the word, don't let them say the number. Don't say how much would you be willing to pay. Say the number. And I know it feels awkward, but I promise you that will get you more money in the long run. The next big concern, and number four on the list, is job hopping. So this is the idea that basically people just work for 6 months to a year, maybe 18 months, and then they move on to the next job and so on and so forth. So over the course of like 12-year career, they've had 6, 7, 8 jobs. Now, a lot of managers and a lot of companies seem to really not like this, as this clip shows.
You can't hold a job down, can you? I mean, you change your job every 2 minutes.
I noticed you weren't there very long, were you?
Gap work?
Yeah.
No.
6 months?
No.
So, and you were there from April till October.
It's a classic, right? It's a real concern where someone says, oh, you're only there for 12 months, like, what happened? And basically, like, the concern broadly makes sense, right? What they're sort of trying to tick off is basically you're not somewhere who gets fired every 12 months for being a huge pain in the ass, basically. It's kind of what they're rooting out for, or that you're not very good at the job, or that you're overemphasizing your skills, et cetera, right? So it does make sense in regards to why people have that concern. The issue I have with it is when people just assume without actually asking further questions, right? Because there's so many legitimate reasons why they might have it. I mean, let's not forget, right, how many redundancies there are going on at the moment. So, like, often people don't want to leave and they're kind of asked to. Or equally, the job changes or they're looking for a new challenge. And like I said, there's obviously so many legitimate reasons for it. And so my advice, honestly, is employers often have more of an issue with this than they do with career gaps. And so my advice is pretty similar in regards to just go through it. Don't hide from the fact that you've had a few jobs, and basically emphasize the good things about that, right? Because the obvious advantages of working for multiple companies is, one, you can onboard yourself pretty quickly. Two, you're used to getting on with new teams. Three, you've obviously seen lots of different ways to do it, so you can bring lots of experience. Like, again, it's just about emphasizing the positives rather than the negatives. Because the honest truth is, someone who's worked at the same company for 20 years would probably be a little bit overwhelmed by having to start with a whole new team, whereas someone who does it every 18 months to 2 years, is obviously much more adept at it, so you can hit the ground running quicker. A phrase I hate, but why not? Throw it in. Let's use it for positive ways for once. So as ever with all these things, it's about emphasizing the positives and trying to negate the negatives. And it's okay to say, look, you probably see it looking at my CV and thing about job hunting. The honest truth is, actually, when you look at the story, you can kind of see why it all happened and how it all ended up. So there's lots of easy ways to kind of explain around it. But again, it's important not to be ashamed about it. And it's also important not to deny it. If they say, oh, you've had quite a few jobs, don't get defensive. Just own that fact and say, yeah, the honest truth is, it kind of really helps me for, I think, for a company such as you, for what you're looking for, because it allows me to join a team quite quickly. I can onboard myself. I've used multiple different systems. I might be able to give a bit of an outside perspective in regards to inefficiencies. I have like 6 companies worth of process that I could perhaps identify that where errors work quite well at previous companies and see if we can do, you know, all this sort of stuff. There's loads of really easy wins that you can pull on and something to really sort of bear in mind. The final tip is just to remember that you are talking to another human. I think we're not quite at the, I know we're at the AI and robots like screenings job applications, but I don't think we're quite at the AI actually conducting interviews yet. And I know there's some phone interviews done, by the way, so please don't just hit the comments about that. I was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, just as an FYI. But that first impression is so, so important. So this is a really important fact to bear in mind. They say the first impression is the last, and it's been reported that people only have 7 seconds on average to make a great first impression. And in the recruiter's opinion, the first 90 seconds are crucial to establish your trustworthiness. Within this short span, recruiters form an idea about you and more or less decide whether you're hireable or not. That is so important, to just be a normal human being, let your personality out, and just trust yourself that you know how to handle it. Okay, if you go in all stiff and trying to be, and I know you'll be nervous, and I know that puts a lot of pressure on the first 90 seconds, and that's not the intention of this, but you really, really want to kind of just go in, take a deep breath, and just be a normal human being. If they like you, you are so much further along the way of being hired. I cannot possibly tell you. And if you want an example of how not to do it, by the way, we found the first 90 seconds of the job interview in the show The Apprentice, and oh my word, is this a car crash from start to finish.
So what kind of turnover and profit are you making from your existing business?
I would say it probably takes around maybe £150,000 to £200,000 a year.
And then what about profit then? What can you give me some idea of profit?
That would be profit, yeah.
No, that wouldn't be profit, that's turnover.
No, oh, okay, sorry, I'm no good with this stuff.
No, but hang on a second. Even someone who's no good with numbers knows the difference between turnover and profit. No, I'm not being funny, but sales is different from profit. You're nodding, but I don't know whether you understand.
Yeah, no, I am understanding what you're saying.
It's not acceptable.
It's so good. I mean, it's not so good. It's a tough watch, but actually, it is quite funny. It just is. And this next story is made me laugh even more. So basically, this is a story from Reddit. The interviewer told me the hourly rate, which was $2 more than I made at the time. And I said, oh, sexy. And that was like 12 years ago, and I still die a little inside each time I think about it. And like, that's kind of the point, right? It's okay to just be a little bit weird in the first 90 seconds, because that's your personality, and that's kind of what ultimately is going to sell it as much as the job. So, you know, think about the first impression, think about what you wear and all that sort of stuff, think about your approach, just treat them like a human being, and I think you'll be surprised how far that gets you. So look, those are the top 5 challenges that we found in regards to people's concerns when it comes to interviews. So please do let me know in the comments if you have any thoughts on this. If there are other issues you want me to address, please do let me know. Please give this a like and subscribe. It means a huge amount to the channel and the podcast, obviously, because it's something we're putting a lot of effort in, and it really helps us to know what type of content you want. So please do let us know there as well. Otherwise, as ever, I'll catch you all next week. Hope everything I said made sense. But if not, you know where to find me.